Welcome to episode 2 in the OnFifth podcast series on globalization. This episode focuses on the truly global asset of gold and the potential benefits to sovereign wealth funds of increased gold allocations. I'm Ben Robinson, senior economist at OnFifth, and I'm pleased to be joined by Xiao Kaifan, director of central banks and public policy at the World Gold Council. Gold has been a significant area of focus for OnFifth over the years, and it's something that we've explored in depth, most recently in the Global Public Investor 2017 report. Gold has played a growing role for investors and asset managers since the financial crisis, particularly among central banks, which have added around 3,500 tonnes since 2008 after a prolonged period of selling from the 1970s onwards. Financial pressures resulting from expansionary monetary policy, low yields and low growth generally have led investors of all kinds to move into alternative asset classes to maintain their returns. Sovereign wealth funds are among those that have increased their exposure to alternative assets in an attempt to compensate for lower oil and commodity revenues, which are the main funding source for this type of investor. According to OnFifth data, there are 92 sovereign wealth funds with almost $7.8 trillion in assets under management globally. Investment patterns therefore have a significant market impact. So Xiao Kai, given the pressures that sovereign wealth funds are currently facing, what role could gold play in their investment portfolio?
First of all, thank you very much for having me here. I think, you know, with that question, it's important to highlight that sovereign wealth funds are actually quite a broad group, and there's a lot of variety in different institutions with different mandates and different investment objectives. Stabilization funds, for instance, are mandated to cover short-term downturns in the oil price for an oil-exporting country. So they might require safer, more liquid assets that are not correlated to oil. And in that case, gold is a very safe haven asset that's highly liquid and has virtually no correlation to oil. So it makes a lot of sense for it to be a fit in the portfolios of those types of sovereign wealth funds. Other funds may have longer-term investment mandates, whether it's for growing a country's FX reserves or passing wealth between generations. And these funds require pro-growth assets that will endure over the long run. And gold is actually a growth asset in the long term. It's actually performed as well, if not better, than both U.S. equities and U.S. fixed income since 1971, when gold was decoupled from the U.S. dollar. In fact, gold has actually delivered performances similar to the very alternative assets you were mentioning before, alternative assets like hedge funds, private equity that the sovereign wealth funds have been moving into in recent years. Gold's average annual return since 2000 is around 10%. And for most alternative indices that are out there, they've returned between 5 and 15% in the same time period on average every year. This puts gold in line with those high growth alternative assets while maintaining its traditional characteristics of being a highly uncorrelated and safe asset. So I think this combination offers a very unique value proposition for sovereign wealth funds.
Then what is the current amount of gold investment by sovereign wealth funds?
It's difficult to say how much gold sovereign wealth funds have already bought. As you know, sovereign wealth funds can range from being completely transparent to entirely opaque about their activities. We do know that some sovereign wealth funds have invested in gold based on their public disclosures. SOFAZ from Azerbaijan is one of them. However, I think it's safe to say that most sovereign wealth funds are not active in gold. And this might stem from a number of different reasons. The first is that many sovereign wealth funds were carved out of existing central bank portfolios. So they might see gold as something that is the exclusive domain of the central bank. The second is that sovereign wealth funds may just have misconceptions about the financial performance or behavior of gold because they're not as familiar with the asset class, which may lead them to overlook this asset class in general.
So you mentioned that there are misconceptions surrounding gold as an investment asset. What are these misconceptions and why do they exist?
So when we did our initial outreach with sovereign wealth funds, we found that a lot of them had recurring opinions about gold. Many sovereign wealth funds, like I said, they're specifically mandated to achieve higher returns than the central bank. So there is a natural inclination towards higher performing pro-growth assets. And there's this misconception that gold is purely a defensive, non-performing asset that just keeps pace with inflation. But quite to the contrary, gold is actually pro-growth over the long run, which is a fact that many people overlook. As I mentioned before, gold has delivered performances that are in line or better than equities over the long run. Gold has delivered performances that are similar to many of the high-growth alternative assets as well. So it's hardly the quiet, rainy day asset that many people think it is. Another recurring misconception is that gold is highly correlated to oil. And since many sovereign wealth funds derive their funding ultimately from oil, they think that investing in gold would ultimately mean doubling their exposure to oil. But in reality, the correlation between gold and oil is now nearly zero. We did see a modest increase in the correlation during the beginning of the commodity supercycle boom years, but that correlation has now returned to zero, particularly in light of the recent decline in the oil price.
So you mentioned some interesting changes there in the correlation between the different asset classes. How else has the gold market changed over the last few years?
The gold market has undergone some major structural changes in recent decades, which have really underpinned the long-term pro-growth skew we're seeing. I think that there are three main structural changes that have taken place. The first is the shift of gold demand from developed markets to emerging markets. Today, China and India are the world's first and second largest gold markets, respectively. And this means that gold demand is linked to these faster growing economies with rising middle classes and increased spending power. The second shift is the change in central bank gold activity. Before 2008, central banks were mostly net sellers of gold. But after the financial crisis, that situation has completely reversed, and now central banks are net buyers of gold. This is because developed market central banks have mostly stopped selling. But more interestingly, emerging market central banks have really increased their gold buying. In fact, nearly all of the new central bank purchases of gold since 2008 have come from emerging market central banks. Kazakhstan, Sri Lanka, and Russia, for example, now hold nearly 4 times more gold in tonnage terms than they did in 2008. And the final structural change is the emergence of new gold products. The advent of gold ETFs in the early 2000s was really a watershed moment for gold because it enabled many more investors to access gold more easily. ETFs grew from just about 1% of annual gold demand in 2003 to over 12% in 2016. These three main factors have all combined to lead to a structural shift in the gold market.
So how can sovereign wealth funds access gold investments, and does it make a difference how they increase your exposure to it?
So sovereign wealth funds are very large institutional investors, obviously. So I think they would require products that can absorb the scale of their potential investment. The institutional physical gold market, whether that's the local London market or some of the exchange traded markets out there, they offer the kind of scale that makes sense for sovereign wealth funds. There are also other large and liquid products like gold ETFs that could be appropriate for sovereign wealth fund investment as well.
So given its useful investment characteristics, what allocation should sovereign wealth funds aim to have to gold?
So we at the World Gold Council, we've done some preliminary analysis on this based on the asset allocations of different categories of sovereign wealth funds. We broke sovereign wealth funds into two different categories: stabilization funds with shorter investment horizons and a focus on safer, more liquid assets, and separately, the capital maximization funds with longer investment horizons and a mandate to achieve higher returns. We then ran a portfolio optimization software that looked at the long-term historical performance of gold and also the various other asset classes that sovereign wealth funds already invest in since 1990, and then ran thousands of simulations of future performance to generate an optimal asset allocation. We chose that longer historical period since 1990 so that we could evaluate the different asset performances over many different economic cycles, different bull and bear markets, etc. And to be conservative, we also constrained the annual return of gold to just 5%, even though gold has actually achieved about 10% in terms of average annual return since the 1970s. So the results of all this were, for stabilization funds, we found that the gold allocation between 2 and 10% would be optimal. For those sovereign wealth funds with a capital maximization mandate, we found that an allocation between 5 and 10% would be optimal. Now, of course, our analysis is greatly simplified because it uses generic allocation levels to represent dozens of different sovereign wealth funds. We're also using indices to represent very multifaceted asset classes. We therefore think that these optimal allocation levels that I mentioned are really more of a starting point for a conversation. And we encourage each sovereign wealth fund to do its own in-depth analysis based on its specific circumstances.
So with the large amounts of purchases by Asian investors, ETFs, and central banks that you've been mentioning as important drivers of the market, are there supply constraints for sovereigns looking to increase their gold exposure?
You know, gold is actually an interesting market because it's self-balancing. There are two main sources of supply for gold. One is obviously mining production. The other is recycling. Unlike oil, for instance, where the commodity is consumed once it's used, gold has a very large and robust recycling market as well. And the self-balancing nature tends to come in the sense that when the gold price rises, the level of recycling contribution to the gold supply actually rises as well. Now, gold mining, we think, will be plateauing the next coming few years. Gold mining is largely going to slow down after 2018. But because of the self-balancing nature of the gold market, we have recycling available as well as another source of supply.
So the market is quite dynamic.
Yes, I think so.
And then just to come back to the point about how liquid this asset is, your research has shown that gold is relatively uncorrelated to oil prices and it's a deep and liquid market. This means it can be easily deployed in times of need by sovereign wealth funds. But the challenge is that if oil-based sovereign funds invest in gold for its liquid characteristics and they all seek to sell when challenged by low oil prices, that could cause a significant market upset and a potential drop in price or liquidity when investors need it most. Is this an important consideration for sovereign wealth funds?
Yeah, I think that every sovereign wealth fund has different investment mandates and different objectives, different internal benchmarks that they need to meet. I don't think it's possible that all sovereign wealth funds might sell at the same time, just like it's very unlikely that all central banks would sell their gold at the same time. And on the other hand, gold is one of the largest, most liquid markets out there. It trades very high volumes every day on the London local market, for instance. It has a higher liquidity than some of the major currency pairs out there. It's more liquid than the German Bund market, more liquid than the UK gilt market. And that type of market liquidity, that size of the market, can definitely handle most flows.
So what are the next steps for sovereign wealth funds and goals? What needs to be done in terms of improving regulations or updating internal fund mandates, increasing investor education, boosting market transparency, and other things like this in order to facilitate higher sovereign wealth fund allocations?
Well, I think the first step is to read our research report, Enhancing the Wealth of Nations Gold and Sovereign Wealth Funds, which we just published. The World Gold Council will then be engaging with sovereign wealth funds directly to discuss our research findings. And I encourage anyone who might be interested in this topic, who we might not have reached out to contact us. And we'd be more than happy to discuss in more detail. But besides this specific research on sovereign wealth funds, the World Gold Council also has lots of data and commentary on gold demand trends, statistics on gold usage, and a whole host of other resources to understand the modern gold market. More fundamentally, though, I think that sovereign wealth funds should start viewing gold not simply as a defensive or non-performing asset, but for the dynamic investment instrument that it has become, one that can help them meet their investment objectives by providing a long-term pro-growth skew without sacrificing liquidity, safety, and diversification.
This is clearly an issue that we will continue to watch closely as the market evolves further. For more information on OnFIF's previous work on gold, go to our website at onfif.org or email research@onfif.org. Next week's episode looks at how much globalization is too much globalization, and we'll be live on the OnFIF channel on Tuesday, so you can download it once it's been broadcast or subscribe to our channel. If you've enjoyed the program, then please leave us a review.